pleased to be joined by our next guest. It's been a while since we've had him on. Appreciate his time. Joe Siddle with Sportsnet joins us here. And Joe, I got to admit, if Friday night you'd have told me we were going to have Joe Siddle on Monday morning, I'd be thinking, this is not going to be a very fun conversation. I don't know. What are we going to be talking about?
Yeah.
But a pretty amazing turnaround from the Chatwood affair to what we saw Saturday and certainly yesterday in Fenway. What a weekend it really was.
It has been. Thanks for having me, guys. It's baseball is like that. We've always said it's a marathon season, lots of ups, lots of downs, and that's why when you're in uniform, especially as a player, coach, manager, you really have to kind of be even keel or as even keel as possible. And there are some heartbreaking losses like Friday, but you just continue to ride that wave, and they've bounced back very well, and they've beaten up on some pretty bad Boston pitching in a park that's pretty hitter friendly, and it's been a lot of fun to watch. So it'd be really nice to get out of Boston taking 3 out of 4. That's why I think tonight's such a big game, because if they were to drop tonight, then it's a split, and it's kind of that little bit of a downer again as they head into that Yankee series. But if they could beat up Boston again tonight and leave with 3 out of 4 going into a Yankee series against a team that's kind of been a lot of stories around the Yankees too. They're not quite what we all thought.
Yeah. We'll talk about, I guess, not so much Friday, but just the bullpen issues in a little bit. But it was when you go into Fenway and do something that's never been done, that's a special day. You've been around the game for a long time. Have you ever seen an offensive explosion? 8 home runs, 20 hits, like what the Blue Jays put up yesterday?
I'm not sure I've ever seen that. That was crazy. It just kept going and going. And I know Rowdy capped it all off with a home run off a position player. But as I said, I don't care, because stats-wise, it's a home run. In fact, when he came up, I said, this is a perfect spot for Rowdy to build a little confidence right here, maybe hit the home run off the position player. I'm sure he did. But these guys, the way they're swinging the bats, and we had talked probably a week or so ago, Jamie and I, in our show about Vladdy. And Vladdy had these pretty drastic home and road splits for his hitting, and he was just tearing the cover off the ball at home. And of course, we attributed a lot of that to TD Ballpark down in Florida, where it's a minor league ballpark. We saw that the wind was blowing out a lot of days, and he was really a kind of up the middle right center guy, and he can do it. He can use the whole park. He can go anywhere. But I said, in fairness, they had also faced a few very tough teams with good pitching staffs on the road that really hurt. I think it was 3 for 30 against like Houston, Cleveland, and Tampa Bay's pitching, all pretty good pitching. So I said, you got to give that time, because things tend to level out. And I think they're leveling out this weekend, because they have their approach, though. It's been so good, because they are a team that when you watch them, they do kind of use the whole field. And I know the Green Monster is a little bit unique in Boston, and they've been peppering that wall and hitting balls over that wall. But I like the way that we're seeing them, and even guys as good as Vladdy, it's not just all about trying to hammer the monster. That you see him go oppo yesterday with the home run. We've seen Bo stay inside a couple balls and shoot him to right, despite, again, the wonderful things we're seeing over the Green Monster. So it's kind of looking like that complete offense. And there are a few guys that still chase and expand the zone, the Gurriels and Grichiks and Bose. They will do that, and it's frustrating when they do, but it seems to be overall, and when I say overall, I'm talking about the big boys, top 5, 6 in the lineup, because it's got to be as good as anyone in the game. And I think the approach is paying off, and certainly being big dividends, because they're handling the fastballs, but they're also handling the breaking stuff. So now it gets difficult to figure out how to pitch them.
Joe, I think one of the things that we were hopeful of before this season started was that this team would be close to playoff caliber, and it appears the offense is most certainly in that category. When you look at the run differential, they've only gotten 4 games of Springer. At times, it's felt like the rotation was the biggest weak point. Certainly more recently, it feels like the bullpen. How do you expect this front office to approach the coming months, where you can, I guess, support this roster with some moves?
Well, it's interesting the way you just worded that. Coming off last season, I hate to take anything away from the team and say they snuck into an expanded playoff format, but I think they did after 60 games. I'm not so sure they were a playoff team last year if that thing goes 162, and I'm not sure the Blue Jays front office felt that way. And after losing 90-plus games just the year before. So it does take time to rebound, but I think when you're just watching this team right now, and I was the first one, I'll raise my hand to say, I had all kinds of issues with the starting rotation going into this season, because you're bringing in Ray and Match, two guys with kind of checkered pass. You're hoping for rebounds from both of them. And I thought if you get a rebound from one of them, it might be a win. It looks like Robbie Ray is that one, but he and Ryu have been a great one, too, at the top of the rotation. And then you look at this lineup, and I felt they were going to hit, but I'm not sure I felt they were going to be kind of top of the league like this, like top in several categories. So that's all great. And it's nice to see the rotation maybe rounding into form. Now, we don't know. You know, Stripling's on a bit of a run. That's nice. At the back end of the rotation, that's a wonderful thing. If Manoah can just do what he's doing and hold the fort, maybe he's a five-inning guy and giving up three or four runs. You know, those back end guys, there aren't too many teams that have great fours and fives. So if you get your big boys at the top doing their thing and the other guys can hold fort, but the bullpen has to be better, and there's just no way, I don't think, you can compete, certainly not to win an AL East or compete for a wild card if your bullpen is in the shape that it's in. How do you address it? You know, I think it was just a token move to bring up that Saucedo the other day. It's a move. That's all it is. It's probably just from being criticized so much that something had to be done. But this bullpen, I think, going into the season was a concern of mine because you bring in like a Yates and Chatwood, two guys coming off injury. So that's high risk right away. And sure enough, Yates isn't going to throw a pitch the whole season. Chatwood was phenomenal, but then things started creeping in, and we've seen this in his past where he's had issues with command. And then you've got your guys like Romano and Dolis who are back, and you hope they're going to be themselves. But after that, you know, you're looking at you hope Meza can be Meza, but he's coming off Tommy John surgery. They've already lost Baraki. So my point is lots of question marks entering this season with this bullpen. And while it started really well in April, now we're starting to see probably the real guys, like probably maybe who Chatwood is and who, you know, you Trent Thornton. Who is Trent Thornton? Well, he's probably a failed starter that can pitch out of the bullpen for you when you're down 3-1 or 4-1. And he's been good in that role. But now you start pulling guys out of their roles and pitching them at higher leverage, and you're asking a lot now from like a Piams and Castro and these guys. So Castro could be a fine. You know, there are good stories when you claim guys off waivers. I think they happen once in a while. We remember Daniel Hudson here, and he went on to win a World Series with the Nats and be very good. But that, for every one of those stories, I think there's six or eight stories where guys aren't necessarily going to be all that. So I don't know that a trade is possible just yet, because if you're the Pittsburgh Pirates or Washington Nationals or a team that's not competing, you've got a pretty good back-end bullpen arm. You're not just giving it away right now in June. So the price is going to probably be high right now, but to do it internally, maybe, but I think it's going to be external. It'll probably be by the deadline. You just hope it's not too late and that they're still in this thing.
Internally, do you see a role for Nate Pearson on this club before the fall?
You know, Jamie and I discussed this yesterday, and the hardest part for me is I'm not watching him pitch right now. I get the numbers just like you guys do, and I'll kind of see, okay, he's doing this. Oh, a lot of pitches and so many innings, whatever. We say the name Nate Pearson, and as soon as you mention that name, it's like, oh, yeah, big high-end guy. But then it's like we haven't seen that a lot. If he is, and if he's pitching well, I don't see why you wouldn't consider a Nate Pearson or even like this Thomas Hatch who's coming back. If these guys, like what Thomas Hatch did last year, if these guys are pitching well, Pearson and Hatch, wouldn't they be nice additions to the bullpen right now? Because they can give you multiple innings. It's a great way to control the workload. Hatch coming back from injury. Pearson, short season last year. They didn't want him to throw 150 innings this year anyway. So they could be nice pieces back there if they're pitching well. And that's the big if, because that's a decision the Blue Jays have to make. They're the ones that have their eyes on them, watching them pitch every time out. But I do think those would be good additions. Now, the problem is, what do you do if a guy in your rotation right now goes down? What if Robbie Ray has to spend some time on the injured list for some reason? Well, you don't want to delve down into the Anthony Kays and TJ Zwicks to come up and start, right? But what I would do in that case is maybe use those guys who are stretched out, add Thornton to that mix with like a Pearson and Hatch if they're in your bullpen, and you can piece together that day with a couple of piggyback type guys, maybe go three each and then hand it off to the bullpen. So I think it can be done. You certainly don't want to sell yourself short on those innings, but I think that would be the most instant help for that bullpen right now.
Do you see anything like this coming for Vlad Guerrero? I know he was one of the more highly touted prospects in the history of the sport, but all at once, wow.
So I looked at him as a hitter over the first couple of years in the big leagues there. And when you do what he did in the minor leagues at such a young age, and it was just so off the charts, I'm not saying I expected him to be a MVP candidate, but I expected he was going to be an elite, elite major league hitter. I really did. Now, the body issues threw a curve into that big time last year. And I remember analyzing his swing a few times last year. And quite frankly, I said his body is not allowing him to get into the positions that he used to get into. And that's that strong athletic position where you can generate the bat speed that you're capable of. Now, DNA is a wonderful thing, and Vladdy's got it because he can generate bat speed like not many other human beings. It is absolutely phenomenal to see some of the things he does. But what's really encouraging, too, is he took it upon himself. He got that body back into better shape, and now we're starting to see those moves in the batter's box again. So you take the physical component, that's one huge part, but he is just so advanced, too, in so many other areas. He's so advanced in reading what a pitcher's trying to do to him. He's so advanced at plate discipline, not giving in and not trying to expand his zone because he knows he's going so well right now and he's in the MVP race and he could be chasing balls out of the zone, but he's not. And that's that baseball IQ and all of those other things that make him such a special hitter. And then, oh, by the way, his age. So you put all those things together and it's a 22-year-old. This is just like unbelievable. And good thing for our country. I think Blue Jays fans will be cheering this guy on, hopefully for a real long time. Maybe he can get locked up for a long time and be a Blue Jay forever.
Joe Siddle, our guest here on Sportsnet. Really impressed with Semien, because I know there were some questions coming in, which Semien was a 2019, 2020, the guy that struggled last year. And I wonder, in that clubhouse, you've got a lot of young guys. And I was curious after the meltdown on Friday, what do you do the next day? Because it was very similar. They had the 5-1 lead Friday, and then they get out to a 5-0, 6-0 lead. When you start getting to the bullpen, do you start to hear those footsteps coming again? But they just shook it off. I just wonder, when you look at it, who are the veteran guys or the older guys who are kind of in there to maybe solidify a clubhouse or a dugout when maybe those things start to rear their head again?
Yeah, I don't necessarily know the personalities of them, but I would think you lean on those veteran voices. Sure, Semien is a leader of sorts, whether he's the vocal type or, you know, there are different types of leaders. I got to put Grant Randall Grichuk, I would think, would be in that conversation as well, just because he has been around longer than a lot of these guys. I know Springer is with the team, and that helps, but it's really hard to be an impactful kind of vocal leader when you're not playing. So I'm sure he's doing it in ways, which is great, and I'm sure that's probably part of the reason why he's with the team, because that's the part I wasn't understanding. He's been out so long that you'd think he'd be down in Florida rehabbing that injury, but he's with the team, so that probably can help. But, you know, you look at some of these kids, and the more we watch Bo and Vladdy play, and even throw Gurriel, and you see how much fun he has in there. These guys have a lot of fun, and Bo and Vladdy, these guys came up together. And when you do that, there is a special bond there. I remember coming up in the minor leagues, and then when you get with your best buddies, and then you get to the big leagues together, like that's you talk about team chemistry. Well, it's beyond chemistry. It's like you're ingrained, your family. And then, of course, they're doing so well. So you got Bo and Vladdy not just coming to the big leagues and doing it together, but they're both stars of the game already. So the veterans help, and I'm sure Semien's voice has been wonderful. And I'm glad that they went out and got a guy like that, because remember last year it was like Travis Shaw and I mean those kinds of – you have to be more of an impactful veteran, I think, to help a young crew. And then, you know, the other name I look at is Joe Panik, very quietly. Here's a guy that's won a World Series and a Gold Glove, and he looks so just so easygoing. But sometimes that's the demeanor you need when things go bad, just to make sure the kids don't go off the tracks a little bit, you know. So I think it's a combination of the AG veterans as well as these kids. But I feel almost already, because like Bo and Vladdy are becoming stars at such a young age, that they're like, this is their team. This team belongs to them, and we'll see veterans probably sprinkled in here and there. Of course, Springer's long-term, but like a Semien, Blue Jays might keep doing this along the way to complement this young core as they continue to learn how to win.
You know, it's an interesting point. Sorry, Ryan, I was just going to say, because I was watching Friday, and after the collapse and they get walked off, you'd think they'd be, you know, you'd be sour, and I'm sure they were, but I know there was the one shot, in the dugout, and it was Bo and Vladdy. And Bo had a smile on his face and said something, and they both kind of shared a laugh. And I got thinking, I was thinking, part of me was like, well, I was shaking that off pretty easily. But you know what? Both of those kids, if you will, man, they've been around the game their entire lives, right? Like, it's in their blood. And yeah, it's one of 100 and a bunch that we play this year. It sucks that and then they came back the next day and they were better. It's to think that, yeah, these kids are so young, but they're already leaders just because how long they've been in the game and around the game.
Yeah. Any major league player, by the time you get to the major leagues and then spend some time there, you know that you have to be, as I described earlier, fairly even keel. If you're a hitter, you have good weeks and months, and then you can tank for a week or a couple weeks. As a pitcher, same thing, and that's why they know. But those guys, especially because they come from it, like you said, they were probably toddlers in major league clubhouses, right? And this, you know how many times in their lives they've probably been told by their fathers that, hey, stay even keel. Don't get too high. Don't get too low. Like, it's just ingrained in them. And that's what I mean by that historical background and growing. That's truly called growing up in the game. But it is. It's ingrained in them. And that's why I do think those types of players, of course, when they get to the big leagues, and they're star players as well, but that's kind of where they separate themselves from others as kind of the total package, because those are those invariables, you know, that others don't necessarily have. But, yeah, they're quite the combo, and I keep referring to those two names because I really do believe this is their team, and I say it because they're the young core. And, you know, not to take anything away from those other guys that are contributing greatly, but with Simeon and Teoscar and Grichuk, this has to be the top five in baseball, doesn't it? It's been unbelievable to watch them.
Just a feel on Springer, any thought? I know there was a notion that he might have be ready for a rehab stint. I don't know if that's happened yet, but there's a thought it could have been this weekend in Buffalo.
My notion on him is I am so tired of hearing the update, guys.
Yeah, fair enough. That's where we're all at.
I'm sure you are too, though. I'm sure you are too. I mean, this was an oblique to start. Then all of a sudden it's a strained quad is what I heard. And I'm thinking, strained quad? Like, did you tear the tendon off the bone? It's just gotten, like, it's gotten to the point where I know in terms of media, we hear people ask questions every day. I don't care if he's running. I don't care if he's between cones or running bases or in the outfield. It's like,
bases,
communication.
Yeah, let me know when you're ready. We'll be here. Yeah.
I worked over with the Detroit Tigers for several years after my playing career, and that was Jim Leland's favorite line. It's like, look, I got a clubhouse of guys here. I'm trying to win a game tonight. When the guy's healthy and ready to join me, let's talk about him. But until then, like, not that you don't care about him, but like, you don't care about him. He's not helping you right now. But yeah, that's the way it's gotten for me. But now, all that being said, add that bat to this lineup when he comes back. Oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Last one for you. Manoah goes tonight. It'll be his fourth start in the bigs. So what have you made of the youngster? It's a great story. It's early, but it's been a great story so far with the upbringing, the family, the stuff, and the tenacity.
Yeah, it is. And I was the first one pounding the table saying, no, 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 it's too early to bring up a guy like this. I think I should spend time at each level, you know. But he had a good one against the Yankees in his debut, which was awesome at Yankee Stadium. What a day to remember for him and for his family. Had a bit of a setback there against the Marlins, giving up a few home runs, and then better last time out. He'll be tested again against this lineup at Fenway Park in a difficult ballpark. But I think the fastball has been excellent. And he's not getting hit tons, but all three home runs he gave up against the Marlins were on his secondary pitches, the slider and changeup. So I'm finding those pitches to be exactly that. They're secondary. They're just not real sharp, that slider at times. And those are the pitches that can hurt you. I think the fastball has been great. It really plays. I find that the velocity ticked up a little bit again in his last start. I think it was down a bit against the Marlins. So that's a good sign. Maybe a little adrenaline rush at Yankee Stadium in his debut, and then a little setback against the Marlins, but the fastball is electric, and I think that he pitches up in the zone, and as we know in this game, we see a lot of pitchers pitch with some velocity up in the zone. It's tough to get to, so I think that's his bread and butter. I just hope he doesn't get hurt with those secondary pitches.
Well, Joey, the point you made earlier, you lose today, and you'll be leaving Boston thinking, how did we split this? I mean, we put up all these home runs, and we had even the 5-1 lead before we lost on Friday. You lose today, and it's going to kind of make you scratch your head a little bit, but still a pretty impressive run through Fenway.
Even
so
keel,
far.
Even keel, guys. Don't ride the wave too high.
That's right. Got it. Joe, really appreciate you, man. It's been a long time. Good to talk to you.
Hey, all right, guys. Have a great day.
You too.